As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
Hey guys, welcome back to The Art of Craftsmanship. My name is Dustin O'Hara, and I'm here with my brother and co-host, Devin.
Hello, hello.
And we are joined again by a longtime friend and longtime from the past guest of the podcast from 2 years ago, almost exactly, Adrian Vita. Oh, wow. From Hickory Homestead Creations.
Hey, boys. Thank you for having me back. It's a pleasure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Two-year anniversary. To be back.
Yeah. Right? fun to chat again. And yeah, this would be cool. I'll give everybody the across the board, we're having some little technical difficulties, but we're just going to go with the flow, and I think it'll be fine. So here we go. All right, Devin, what do you got for us today?
I'll give a little context before I do the quote, even though I normally don't, but it makes more sense if I do. Mark Raybert, I think that's the way you say his last name, he was the head of Boston Dynamics, the people who make those crazy dogs. Robot dogs that they kick all the time, you know?
Yeah.
But he's talking about how he used to make the videos showing demonstrations on the cool stuff they came up with. Here it is. Well, I was the final edit for most of the videos up until about 3 years ago. My theory of the video is no explanation. If they can't see it, then it's not the right thing. And if you do something worth showing, then let them see it. Don't interfere with a bunch of titles that slow you down or a bunch of distractions. Just do something worth showing and then show it. Okay. And it makes sense if you've seen, you know, those early, like, Boston Diamond. It was just no titles, no nothing. It was just like the robot walked in the frame and did something amazing. But I liked just the last chunk of that. Just do something worth showing, then show it. Like, for video making, for everybody, when people are thinking about whether they want to get into it or what they should do, you have to start with do something worth showing. You know?
Yeah. I think that I think that's the first thing, right? Is to you know, what is that though? Like, what is doing something worth showing? I guess that's depends on each person's opinion, but that should be like your own opinion, right? You should be saying like, what I'm doing, I think is worth showing. And if you feel like that, like if you enjoy what you're doing, then that'll come through in the content that you're creating, I think.
Yeah. My point was that you don't have to worry so much about the production value and making it fancy. You should worry first about making something that is will be interesting to other people or you know, that you like. So just do something worth showing and then don't faff about with how to present it.
All right.
If it's cool enough, it'll kind of stand on its own. I mean, that's a little bit different from like making something to having a robot that like that's super cool.
Right.
But like, I don't think you have to worry too much about that not looking cool, but I thought it was nice. Like, oh yeah, just start with something good first, and then you'll figure out how best to show it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in the quote, like halfway through, he says something like he was leading up until like 3 years ago. I wonder if that means like up until 3 years ago that was working. He was leading videos. He was doing them. Right?
He was the final. He would edit them. He would shoot them and edit them just like on a cell phone.
Okay.
And then now they have more production value, which I remember thinking like, oh, maybe they should shoot these a little better, but the videos went viral anyway because they had something so cool to show that it didn't really matter how they did it.
See, yeah, that's like where I struggle the most is like sitting there and going like, okay, is you know, the lighting perfect? Is this angle perfect? You know, is this showing exactly what I want to? And I spend so much time wondering if I have all these things right that I just never end up recording it or posting it or doing any of that because I've already picked it all apart and all the like deficits. Whereas if I would just put it up, then it'd be, you know, people probably wouldn't see all those negative parts.
No, most of the videos that go viral anyway aren't like anything special production wise. Right. And I think there's almost more trouble that you can have when you overproduce something where it just becomes too much of the slow motion, crazy camera movement stuff where then you're missing what's cool about the thing. Then you're trying to get too fancy.
Right. Yeah. I think too, I mean, I think you just need to show enough, at least for me, with doing like reels and shorts and stuff, and like going from just showing posts about what I'm doing to showing like a process, so like a mini version of our videos, is like just show enough that people understand the steps to where I got from one point to the next. And so that's, you know, really like that can be either a time lapse of everything or it can be just a few seconds of each of somewhere in the middle of each step in the process. And that's kind of what I started doing over the summer was to just think about the whole process. And when I would change and do something different, I would get a few shots of that. You know, I just change the camera angle and get a shot that's like a minute and a half long. And then I would figure out where in that minute and a half of that me doing the next step in the process, I could find a good 3 second clip that looked interesting. Right. Yeah. So it needed to be interesting enough to show that thing, but also have enough information in 3 seconds that people could understand. You go from here to here to here to here to here, and then you come away with this end product. Because I think that's the benefit of reels and shorts and things is that you're actually able to show the process. And you can show the process with pictures as well, like, you know, steps along the way. And I do that often enough, but there was something kind of fun and different about creating it that way. So I think my main thing was like, as long as I can change the camera angle each time and just show a piece of that step in the process, then it kept it interesting, at least for me to make it. And that was kind of, I think, the hurdle of me getting into doing like shorts was that they weren't doing what I wanted them to do. And then eventually I saw something where they did and I was like, oh, I can do that. Like I could do something similar to that. Cause that does the same type of thing that we want to do for our videos, I thought.
But it's tricky. Mm-hmm. Now, Adrian, hot tip that I gave Dustin was was when you're like, if you feel like something's getting stale, I think it's, I don't know the exact degrees, but it's to avoid just the constant standard shots that will lead to jump cuts, which is actually totally acceptable now. But you just want to shift 30 degrees any which way. It could be up, down, left, or right. But that movement feels natural, and then that just slowly moves people around the area too, showing all sides. But then it's just a nice way to think, oh, where do I want this next shot? And if you can't think of it, the perfect shot, just move it 30 degrees anyway and then work for a bit. And then you can go any way. You could go back 30 degrees. It doesn't matter. But as long as you're doing that shift, it's a comfortable way for people to, it's like a traditional rule.
Mm. Right. I was about to say my brain works in the kind of way that like it'll remember that. Like that it only needs to be a certain amount. You know.
So right.
It's actually a pretty handy tip.
Yeah, that's like what you've said in the past, Evan, that a lot of like knowing how to do something well is just understanding the trick. You know,
yeah, if
you
little understand trick. The
trick for it. You know, like, so there's just a little trick here and there on some of these things. Like, yeah, oh, I can, you know, you're like, oh, I can never do it. And then someone tells you the trick and you're like, oh, okay, I could do that. Yeah, that makes sense.
Shift the camera 30 degrees in any direction and that will avoid jump cuts and that will just keep the interest flowing, I think, you know, in shot variety.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder, like, you know, I think also it might be, you know, the environment, because I think that's important too, is like having an environment that that isn't, I don't know, it's what do I want to say?
Like interesting, like, to look at, you mean? Like a background?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
You mean like not a dirty bedroom or a bathroom?
Maybe. I don't know, though. Maybe not. You know, it's like, I don't know, like, I think the environment is inspiring, you know, so like when you get into a space that you like being in, then you don't mind showing it off. And, you know, when my shop gets really messy, then I get self-conscious about like the angles that I'm showing. So if the shop is clean,
yeah, mm-hmm.
and the space is nice, then I'm like, then I'm excited to like show it from all different angles and stuff because I feel like, you know, it represents what I want it to represent. So that's like, maybe that's something too, you know, cause like I always say, it's really nice having to shoot, you know, YouTube videos in my shop because I have to keep my shop clean. Because otherwise it would just like consistently get messy and all the like surfaces would get covered, which they do anyway. But at least I have to keep it some modicum of cleanliness, you know, so we can shoot down.
Modicum. It's not like, nice.
Not crazy. I don't think.
Good word.
But yeah.
All right. But so you need to have a beautiful like a farm spot like Adrian has, and then it looks good from every angle.
Right. An old barn, you know, shop, like
fields.
Yep. Fields, yep. Yeah. Just get yourself an old barn.
You can never go wrong with that. People love making things, love old barns.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, we have Adrian, like I said, back with us. Adrian from Hickory Homestead Creations. We had her on 2 years ago in February, and this was following up after our first Maker Camp of 2021. We're super excited to have you back. It's been a while since it's been a while since we've had you on the podcast, obviously, but it hasn't been all that long since we've seen you because I saw you at Maker Camp this year, and then we both saw you at your Friends of the Farm event, which was super cool last year. So welcome back. Good to have you.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah, Maker Camp this past year, man. What a rainstorm, huh?
Oh my gosh, it was epic. that will always go down as like the crazy rainstorm year. Everyone will be like, "Oh, I remember that year. It was nuts."
Yeah, yeah, Maker Monsoon at 23.
Yeah, yeah.
And those are the two. There's two reasons. Other than just missing it, that I was upset about missing it, was one, everyone's bonding experience of this monsoon that I'll hear about forever. Like, oh, you had to be there. You just don't know. And then, and then the fact that Dustin took no video or photos of him shooting and his setup and all you guys in the tent and stuff. There is no record that any bow making ever happened last year. It's been wiped. It's been wiped from history.
That's definitely a very first year, like, demonstrator rookie mistake thing. And I'm still, like, 2 years in, and I'm making the same mistakes, too. I'm like, and I even have, like, the frog pod and stuff, and you think, like, okay, just slap it on one of these metal poles here and, you know, just press record and just get the whole thing. But I never think about doing that. I'm just so focused on getting ready for the actual, you know, event and whatnot. But, this past year, though, taking Grayson was a challenge in of itself, and then to throw in the rainstorm, it was one to go down in the books forever.
You guys, though, a killer setup. You had a killer dry setup.
Yeah.
Tell us about your how you were camping.
Yeah, so this was the first year that I didn't sleep out of a tent, and that was because of the fact that last year it was so cold, and so this year I knew that I was taking my son, and so I went ahead and got on Amazon, and I ordered a a air mattress like set up for the back of your like cab of your truck and stuff. So I took my mom's truck up. It was a Ford F-150 pickup truck. So it was all loaded full of everything that I needed for Scroll Saw demos and like staying overnight and camping and stoves and all that good stuff. And so I set up the air mattress and whatnot, and then I ran an extension cord from the woodworking tent into my truck, and then like had like a power bank set up in there. And so whenever the rain whenever the rainstorm hit, I just put the windows up so that the rain guard protected the cord and whatnot, and it kept it completely dry inside. We didn't get like any sogginess or anything, so it was a really it was a really awesome setup. And we stayed warm with a heated blanket. Mint.
Nice. Yeah, that was awesome when I was like, when you had that set up and I got there and you like just opened the door and you got the air mattress in there and the bed in the back seat. Yep. I was like, oh man, definitely jealous of that. Although I did stay dry. My tent, I had that like tarp bottom. It's just like a Coleman 10x10 dome tent, but that tarp bottom, you know, works remarkably well. There are a few spots where actually the rain was like dripping in from above me, you know, like where the fly touches the surface and stuff. So, but it was just like little drips here and there. So, you know, the amount of rain, I stayed pretty dry. Our buddy Sean, who went up with us, his tent was not waterproof. Fortunately, he was up on like an air mattress. So he stayed dry, but like everything else, his tent got soaked.
Why wasn't his tent waterproof?
Yeah.
Just an old backpacking tent, you know, it doesn't have that like that handy dandy tarp bottom, you know, tarp bowl bottom. But man. Yeah, I know. Yeah, but it was funny. So like I think the second or the third night, he actually slept inside the shipping container. So like we had the shipping container for the archery range, and he just took his tent and slept inside. He was like, I'm just gonna sleep inside. I was like, yeah, that's a good idea.
Maybe maybe we should all just stay in there next year and just. But my exactly. snoring would reverberate and like rattle the place.
It'd be a good sound drone. And then we had an awesome setup with just like, again, you know, all the campers, everyone who's now been there a couple years. And I think each year it's just going to get better and better with our little village of in the trees campsites there and stuff. So we had lots of people who were all on board for basically creating this like little family village of campers, which was awesome this year. Unexpected for me, but super awesome.
Yeah, I actually am going to reach out to Austin. Well, I already did to just confirm that I'll be back again this year as a demonstrator for a Scroll Song. But I also said that I had some ideas for the camping section that I wanted to talk to him about. And so I'm definitely going to, and I'm, because I told him that I wanted to do like a Zoom session kind of thing. So I would definitely be open to having like multiple people who like all stayed in the camping section to like meet, you know, have like a little meeting with him and talk to him about some improvements, you know, just from the people that stay there, you know, because I know a couple people got parked in and stuff like that. And, you know, I think there just needs to be some like order to back there now that it's starting to like pick up some momentum.
Yeah, because we got there this year. Sean and I got there Thursday night, like at midnight, and it was already full. Like,
damn.
Yeah, I know, because I was there Thursday morning, and like same thing. I was just like, dang, by the time I was already rolling up, I was like, this is already getting full, and I was here early.
Yeah, it's nuts. I think everyone's just like, you know, people who are brave, you know, and like okay to brave the weather and camping are like, oh, that's, I can just do that. That's way cheaper. That's just included in my ticket. So why not?
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's how definitely I was had from all the, day one.
Yeah. Us too. Right. That's, we were like, well, yeah, if we can camp, we can camp. That's cool. And then of course, like when we found that it was right on the edge of the whole site,
oh,
like,
it was perfect. Yeah,
there's not a better spot than that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. So what a few sneak peeks are you going to suggest other than like a maybe more orderly like parking setup?
We want to have like a whole like camping area, camp kitchen set up, because there is like those whole wash basins and stuff. There's like that whole big fire pit over in that one section. So I think if we can have it a little more organized, we can have more like planned, you know, meals, because us campers over there, we usually don't get the meal passes, you know? So if we can all just come together instead of people buying food, like, especially like the people that come from over the border and stuff like that from Canada, you know, they have to pay a lot of money to get that food. So, you know, it would, and Ryan ended up giving me a lot of his like leftover stuff because he couldn't take it back over the border with him, you know? A lot of, to me, that's a lot of his money wasted. When, if you just like pull in and say, here's like 20 bucks to chip in, just like, let me, you know, eat on your meals or whatever, then I think that's way better kind of deal than, you know, what does end up happening.
You're right. I think everyone, you do all end up spending a little bit too much. Like Dustin and I would buy like 150 bucks worth of stuff, like from Walmart on the way down, and maybe not that much, but it was at least like 100 bucks, right, Dust? So it's like 50 bucks each, and then we after we're splitting up all this food, so all of a sudden I have a pack of like 100 granola bars like a giant bag of beef jerky and like 30 Yoo-hoos or something. It's like, I don't know what I'm going to do with all this.
Right. Yeah. But I think so this year we had, you know, which I think, I know you had part in organizing it, and some of the other people who were there organized like kind of bigger group meals each night. So like, and then you guys, you know, Sean and I didn't really know about it, and you guys were all generous enough to be like, hey, you know, we're all the campers are welcome. Like, we're doing a big meal here. So we didn't end up going to the cafeteria except for like, I think for one breakfast or maybe like the first morning, because we had all the meals there. And so like, and you know, this year, I think that's an awesome thing to do. And I think everyone, you know, everyone who has like done it in the past, maybe the goal, or at least what I would think would be kind of cool, is that like we who have done it in the past know that, okay, now we'll bring stuff along to pitch in for meals at night. And then if there are new campers there that haven't done it before, then you welcome them in, right? Hey, come on in. You know, we've got food, we got enough for everybody. And then the next year, then they pitch in as well, right? So it can keep growing. But you don't feel like, if you're there and you didn't know it was happening, you're still welcome to be part of it, you know. And that's the way we felt this year. We were like super grateful that like everyone was so welcoming, and that Sean and I weren't planning on that, but you guys were like, hey, we already had this kind of in the books, we know it's going to happen, we've got food, come on over, there's enough for everybody. So
so the craziest part about that is like Kristen and I, we didn't even know each other really before that day. So before we met, whenever we were both pulled up on like Thursday or whatever day, because I think they got there like the day before me or whatnot, we didn't even know each other, we didn't talk, we didn't coordinate that we were having these group meals. We kind of just came together and said, hey, I'm having pasta night, and she's like, okay, well, I have this stuff, and I'm like, and I have all this stuff, let's do these group meals. And we made it work from day one to the end. Totally unplanned. Awesome.
And that was the thing, like, I know that you planned to have like the pasta dinner Thursday night.
Yeah, I mean, that was the only thing that was like really planned.
Right, but that was like, that was just you offering it up as a like, hey, I'm gonna do this thing. So like, we knew that was a possibility, but then that's so cool that everyone just kind of like pitched in, and everyone was like happy to do part of it. That was great.
Though, if we make this really great thing about how you only got to pitch in like 10, 20 bucks, our super crowded camping area is going to become a super, super, super crowded camping area. So what do we do about that?
Well, you know, as long as everybody just contributes. Because that's what happened last year. I mean, like, even there's people that were staying in Airbnbs that they didn't have the meal passes and stuff like that. Because they're part of the Maker's Stoop, like most of my you know, buddies over there and whatnot. So, and they were part of the, you know, Boston night invite kind of thing. And, you know, so it wasn't really just only to the campers, because if you didn't get, you know, pretty much if you didn't get a room, you didn't get a meal pass. Excuse me.
Right. Yeah.
And, so I wanted it to be like a fair opportunity that if anybody, because usually, if you're cutting corners, the first thing you're going to cut is your food. Like, I just know that. And I'm the person, I love cooking for one, and I can make, I can take a lot of food at like a very inexpensive cost and make a lot of things with it and feed a lot of people.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I think, like what you were saying, if, you know, if there's a conversation about how to organize that area better, I think the, you know, the organization of where tents go can be much more organized, right? It doesn't have to be like lines, but it could be like, okay, in this area is all tents, right? So then people can be closer together. You can kind of get tents in with little rows and stuff. And then, like you said, maybe there's an area that's like a big food area, right? Where so people aren't set up right around the fire pit. So then the fire pit can be open, or then the, like, you know, then maybe like you guys had a, like a nice, you know, couple tents thing set up with the screens and all to create a little, you know, thing to sit underneath the picnic bench. So if we get like a couple extra benches back there, and we get, you know, maybe, who knows, maybe Austin gets a tent that's a little bit bigger for like an eating hall, you know, could have like the grand hall, you know, and see.
Well, so that's what one of the back there. One of the campers is talking about bringing one of those, a bigger hard canvas tent for back there, as long as Austin would allow it, so that we could eat, have a tent to eat under.
Yeah. You know, it'd be nice if you, just to open that area up a little bit, move the fence that's usually there, move that over another 25 to 50 yards, then you double the space of the camping area, and you're not losing anything on that other side of the fence, because that whole area was kind of so open anyway.
I mean, you mean on the fence in the field?
Yeah, because the field, it's like the small hill that goes down, and there's a fence right there, right?
Right. Yeah, but I think the fence kind of runs right into the what was that? It was the tent
that was there.
Not that, well, the woodworking tent's on that side, but I'm talking the restoration tent that was in 4 inches of water.
Yeah, but couldn't we just move? Yeah, just move that corner that's there now. That corner would just be moved 25 yards, so you still set up all the tents, because you have room that way. We don't have room pushing the camping site the other way.
Right.
So they had a big box truck up there with all the wood from the wood supplier.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Which I'm sure is going to be there again.
Yeah, or even if it's just like there's a different area to park the vehicles that people are using when they're camping, right? So it's not in the same field, because then it just opens it up a ton. Or there's just like a line, you know, he puts up like a orange fence or something, and so you pull up to that orange fence and you can fit in 50 cars or whatever, 25, 30 cars, and then you just have everything on the other side of that is there for tents. Because people like pull in like you did and like we did. Like everyone just kind of pulls in to your spot. Yeah, and then you all set up around it, and that's fine. That's worked fine in the past, but as that area grows, I think it would be cool to like you're saying, I think there just needs to be a discussion of how we can, you know, optimize that space to make it the most accessible for everybody.
Yeah, because it definitely filled out from even the previous years.
Right.
I couldn't believe how many people were there last year.
That's great. Back, you know, it's like section. Yeah, it's the little like secret, you know, best deal of Maker Camp. You're camping, you're right there. You can't get any closer to the action. It's awesome. Nah. And you know, for me, having the archery range inside of the shipping container right there, and then having, you know, my stuff set up right on the other side was really nice. So things I wanted to like put away, I can put away easily over into my area. So there's definitely like a benefit of being that close to it. But that was the other thing, man. You and I got lucky being in the under the tent that we were, that woodworking tent, because I think that was the only tent that stayed relatively dry, because everything else was like being up in the tennis courts.
So I will have a backup plan for next year, because this year, unfortunately, where there goes the furnace. Unfortunately, where they set me up at was in that corner. So naturally, by the time that most of the rain has, you know, taken place, the water eventually just keeps running down, and like any leaks that would have happened at the top of the canopy or whatnot have all drained down on the edge, and they're just my saw was getting dripped on, other people's saws were getting dripped on. I was like, and I'm done. I didn't hold any demos that all Saturday. I kind of was just in like damage control. I was getting all the cords up out of the water and just making sure nobody was getting electrocuted.
I pulled in my table so they were like further away from the edge, and I had where like my draw horse was, and I was doing demos. There was like a little spot, maybe, you know, like a 3-foot circle that was kind of dry right around there. And as I would stand there and I'd be working on the bow, there was like one drip above me that kept dripping right down onto my draw horse. So I had to like shift it a little bit, but I had like one little dry spot in that corner, you know. And then there would be like you said, all the water would run down the edge of the tents, and it would build up on the edge, and then people would be walking around with like 2x4s and stuff, like pushing the water off. So you'd get these like huge splashes and water would be all over everything. It was, yeah, not the greatest setup, but I think, again, like I think out of all the places, I think we had probably the driest area, only because it was up on the, up in the tennis court.
Oh, up on the plateau, the island.
Yeah, right, exactly. Oh man, it was wild.
Oh, but honestly, like that, yeah, that was quite a learning experience.
Yeah,
for everybody involved.
And then when we all came to your place for friends on the farm, we also had a rainy experience.
Got rained down.
That was not bad at all. Yeah, that was good. You had the big fire going, and that kept on raging all through whatever rain we had, and we had a couple of the like 10x10 pop ups and stuff, and.
Yeah, it was great. Just like put them side by side.
Yeah, and all hung out near the fire. That was so much fun. That was a blast. And like, you know, fun small group. We got to meet Pete and Emma for the first time, which was really cool. And then, you know, like,
yep.
I've been able to stay in touch with them, and they're having a little baby. They just announced that.
I know. Now they're having a little baby. I'm so excited for them.
they're so like. I don't know, almost the like cheesy cute, like, but
I know.
Knowing them, but knowing them and having chatted and talked with them for like hours,
they're like they're the like, most humble and like,
so, yeah, yes, they're just so fun and fun loving and easygoing and like caring people and loving and friendly. Like what comes across in the videos is exactly who they are. It's like so fun. Like I'm like,
I man, just absolutely like their little love like
dance
them,
thing. Yeah.
That and that's great. Exactly how they are, like, and even in, like, real life, because, like, whenever I was, because this was the first year that, like, I drove myself to Maker Camp, and so I was, like, and because Grayson was coming with me, I'm, like, okay, this, and it was the only vacation I was getting all year, and I was, like, okay, well, now Grayson's going with me, I was, like, so we're making a road trip out of it, and so I stayed overnight, because Grayson and I, we left Tuesday after he got out of school. Nope, ended up being Wednesday, really early Wednesday morning. It was originally supposed to be Tuesday, but we left really early Wednesday morning and got to Pete and Emma's and stayed overnight at Pete and Emma's and got to like see the shop, see the house, like hang out and everything else like that. And then I drove to Maker Camp from there, which was a really short and easy drive. But they, I mean, she's just so adorable. Like, I got up really, I was the first one up in the house, and she had like little notes written everywhere. Like, here's the, you know, here's the cereal for breakfast, and here's how you make coffee, and it's already set, and the creamers are in the fridge. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is just too much. It was just absolutely adorable.
Too cute.
It was, she was the best house, like, hostess person I've ever like stayed at their home. It was great.
It's so much fun. Like I said, it's fun after, like, because I had seen some of Pete's stuff before I met him, but not really much. Like, I didn't know him much, and then like meeting him and then, you know, following along a little bit more, and then Emma's as well. And like, if I hadn't met them, like the way they are on camera would seem like they're pushing a personality more, but it's really not.
Yeah.
It's just like, that's right. Who they are. They're just like super sweet, fun people. And it's, and that's like even much more heartwarming. I'm like, oh, you're Pete and Emma, just be a Pete and Emma.
I mean, it gives you like faith that humanity really is still there. Like, you know what I mean? Like that there are really still good people out there. It's not all fake. You know, not saying that they portray to be fake or anything, but, you know, it's very hard to see people these days and go, is that really how your life is? Like, because right, I think that's exactly why I don't like posting about my life. Is like, my life for the past year is like very messy and just very, there's, you know, things that happened that weren't very good. You know, like I had an alpaca die, and, you know, I had an alpaca get very sick, and, you know, I had all these things that felt like failures, and, you know, I didn't know how to talk about them or how to share them or if anybody even really cared, you know, like there's also that where you like you post something and it's just like three likes, you know, you're like,
yeah, because everything we see is people like going viral and showing crazy things and super successful and everything like looks perfect. But you're only seeing that like tiny edited part of their life. You know, and like you said, most people are showing the good stuff because that's the stuff they think people want to see, which most of the time it is. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Like people want to see, you know, like they want to use social media as a way to get away from their own life that isn't always perfect like that. But that's the thing. Everyone's life is like that. You know, everyone has those things. And like, you know, so I think, you know, in a small way, when we do our YouTube videos and we show little mistakes and stuff, we include them because like that's the reality of it. Now obviously, of course, we're editing, you know, whatever hours and hours of work down to 40 minutes or less, but occasionally there is that reality of like, yeah, this is what it is. And that's why like I also, as we do more things, I like to go back to do the simple things. I like to show the simple things because not everything has to be like way better than the last thing. You know, it's not like you have to every time you're like always aiming to like get twice as good as you were for the last one. Like I just made these little Viking EDC knives and you know, like I made them so quick. I made them in 2 days. I made 5 knives and I was like, it doesn't have to be perfect. Like it can be a little bit off and it can be a little bit organic. And you know, I've done really clean and like perfect things. And I think there's like a benefit to that, but there's also a benefit to just like having fun and making something and, you know, doing it for the love of making it. And maybe like, you know, I was drilling holes in the wood to put the hidden tangs of the knives in, and some of the holes weren't perfect. And that was like, that was okay. You know, it didn't matter. Like it's not going to affect the use of the knife at all. And so like, I just showed what I was doing and, you know, like that, you know, using like, metal files for making knives. That's something that I did when I very first started. And so like in the grand scheme of knife making, that's something you don't do after you've like, you've done, you know, known steel and you know how to heat treat it, you know how to do it well. You don't go back, you don't regress back to like a very first thing. But I mean, why not? You know, like I like metal files still make okay knives and saw blades make okay knives. And if that's what you need and that's what you're working to, then like you can go back, go forward, go anywhere, you know? Like, I think we should feel okay to make things that we enjoy and not have to do, like, not have to, you know, follow the prescribed, like, you know, motions of makers and what we see.
You have to remember that, Dustin, we're on, like, day 5 of a shoot and you decide to redo something. I'm like, no, just, we can finish it tonight. You're like, no, I gotta do it again.
It's like, that's like when I'll be like knitting a hat and my mom's like, oh, you just unravel that. And I'm like, what? Are you a serial killer? What is wrong with you? What do you mean just pull
enjoy
it?
Pain?
You just unravel it?
Sadistic sicko.
You know how long this just took me?
I know Nicole does that all the time. She'll like make a mistake. She'll realize that something was a mistake and it's like, you know, 10 rows back. And 10 rows doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're knitting 10 rows and each row is, you know, like a 10 inch, you know, circumference circle, like that's, you know, a couple hours of work or potentially, you know, like, depending on what you're doing. It's like,
you're like, shit, then, I might as well just go to bed now. Fuck.
Right. And then you're like, you're unraveling it. Then you have to re-put it on the needles. You have to know how to do that without fucking it up. You know, it's like, man, when she goes back and does this stuff, I'm like, whew, all right, God bless you. But
that's like, that's when you go back to restart sanding something on another grit. Like you switch belts and you go backwards. Yep. I'm like, no, it's fine.
Like, look at all the scratches, though. Yeah.
Don't go back.
Dude, so I was, I did a market. And 2 weekends ago, I did the first market of the year, and it actually panned out to be very good for me. I sold this like coffee table that I've been hauling around to every market last year, and finally, the first market of the year, I sold it. And the lady was like, so there was two ladies there. One lady ended up buying it, and then the other lady that was there, she's like, well, I like this, but I need something taller. And so I tried to sell her this American chestnut table that I had, that I made, and it's in my garage. But it wasn't the right height for her. And so she's like, I need it to be 36 inches, which is a really odd height for a table, yeah, but yeah, whatever. It's custom. I will make you whatever you want. And so I started pulling all this reclaimed boards that my neighbor dropped off. He's like, hey, I have this whole stack of wood. If you don't want it, I'm going to burn it. I'm like, okay, yeah, sure, I'll take it. So he brings it over, dumps it off in my barn. You know, that lovely barn you guys all love. And so I just like went over there and I started pulling some boards and stuff and I started sanding them down. And so I have four, you know, boards pulled for the top and they're already like cut down to length and stuff. And so I'm sanding them and I'm on the fourth board, the last one, and I'm sanding it. I'm like, this is black walnut. And I was okay, shoop. And I pulled that off to the side. I was like, this is not going on this table because the rest of it's been oak so far. And, well, one of them actually, so two boards are oak and one's American chestnut. And so then I went into the, back into the pile. I grabbed out like two more boards. They were both also black walnut. And then I pulled out another board that was American chestnut. So my neighbor literally just brings me like thousands of dollars of free, the best reclaimed wood you could ask for.
You gotta love like living in an area where like just the level of, you know, of what people consider valuable changes. You know, it's like if someone who's like has a farm and they need to take down a barn and put up a new barn or they need to fix a barn, they don't care what the wood is. They don't care if the wood's old and rotted and it's got a bunch of nail holes, like they're just going to get rid of it. Like the value changes based off of what you like, you know? So that's one of the things that I try to think about when, like, if I like something and I want to like sell it for a certain amount, like that's one thing. But if someone else doesn't have that same perspective, you have to like, you have to get them to understand why that has that value. But understanding and having like, knowing that someone else may not have the same value, if you have the right like connections or if you know the right people, you can be like, hey, I'm willing to pay you what I think is fair, but also I know that, you know, you don't have the same value as that. So where can we come somewhere in the middle that makes it fair for both of us? You know, you feel like you got something good out of it and I feel like I got something good out of it. Like that's what I try to do with you know, like when you go to yard sales or tool sales or something, if I'm looking for something, you know, someone's like, I don't know what it's worth. This is what I could give you.
What do you feel is a fair percentage gap? Like, let's say you see a tool you want and you've been looking for it and it's been $200 everywhere. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I don't really want to spend $200 on this certain tool. How low does it get before you tell that person, hey, let me give you a little bit more for it? So is it like it's a $200 tool and they knew nothing about it, so they're selling it for $10? Do you just give them the $10 or do you go, here's $20? Or is it like,
yo, if they're selling here's the $10.
Well, I will say so.
But in all honesty, I've also gotten ripped off by a meth head on an $80 miter saw. So, I'll do the $10 all day.
You're just trying to recoup some of your
yep.
Well, I told, so when I got my anvil, which is a Sawyer's anvil, so like a saw maker anvil, it's a 260 pound anvil, and I got it from a guy. I posted on the local, I don't know if it was Facebook Marketplace or Nextdoor or whatever, I just posted that I was looking for an anvil because we live in kind of farm country and I'm like, maybe someone has an old anvil in a barn that they don't care about and they're willing to sell it to me. And so I just said, I'm looking for an anvil. Like, I'm local. I don't have a lot of money to spend. Anvils are really expensive right now in the market. And I'm looking, hopefully maybe somebody has something and you're willing to help someone else in the community. And so a guy reached out and he said, I have this anvil that's been sitting around in our shop for a long time. It hasn't been used. It's just been sitting in the corner, you know, collecting dust. So he's like, come down to my shop. It's down in Baltimore. So I went down and when I got there, he's like, here's the anvil. And we had actually talked back and forth beforehand. And I was like, well, what do you want for it? And he's like, well, I have no idea what it's worth. Like, I don't really care. And I was like, okay. I was like trying to feel him out. I'm like, well, maybe we do some type of trade, you know, like I can make something and give it to you if that sounds good, right? Because then there's a different type of value to that type of thing. And we kind of went back and forth. And so I was just like, how about $100? And he was like, great, sounds good. Like, and I think in his mind, it's just like this chunk of steel that's taking up space, and $100 is better than a chunk of steel that's taking up space.
$100 always sounds good.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so, but the other thing is that in that conversation, he told me that somewhere in the shop, maybe another anvil. And he was like, it's one that's kind of got like the point on one side. He's like, I'm not sure what it's called. And so I'm like, okay, well, that's more of a traditional anvil, you know, with a horn. And, you know, so, and what I told him, I was like, well, if you find that anvil and there's a name on it and it says something, like, it could be worth a decent amount of money, and I'm willing to look at it with you. And if you want to sell it to me, I'll buy it from you for whatever. And if you want to make more money off of it, I can help you identify what it is and then who you can reach out to sell it to someone else for more money, you know. Mm-hmm. So I like, I made the first connection and I got like a good deal, and then after that I'm like, I'd also be willing to buy another anvil if you want to sell it to me for cheap to take it off your hand, but I'm also willing to help you sell it for more if you want to try to get more money from it. So that was the kind of consolation, was that I had already made a good deal, so I was willing to help him. I also told him that, you know, I did say to him that the anvil that I bought from him could be worth a lot more if, like, he was interested in trying to sell it for more. And he was like, no, $100 sounds good to me. So I, like, kind of made the, you know, I made the effort to be honest with him. But I do think that there's a level there where, you know, if, maybe it depends on the person, right? If someone's, like, if their whole deal is selling things. Mm-hmm. And they have a bunch of different stuff, and they have something for really cheap, cheaper than it is anywhere else, then like, okay, cool. I'm happy to buy that for whatever they're selling it for.
For sure.
If it's, you know, someone who doesn't know what they have and they're like, I don't know, what do you think? You know, then I might give them an honest price or something, or try to, like, you know, find a middle ground, you know, be like, hey, this is what it might be worth.
Yeah. But, or yeah, if it's something they have no idea, like they're selling a record for like $2. You're like, right. Well, I know it's really rare. It's like $60. Let me give you $20 for it.
Right.
Well, I think a good point there is if you know there's someone who's always selling that type of stuff, if you give a fair price, or even if you give them a little bit more, then maybe it's just that good karma thing where then they'll come back to you anyway and just be like, look, I found this other thing.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
You said you like it. You can buy this one for $100 too.
Right. Yeah.
I did that, and if it's a lot of money, then who knows? Then you're really trying to figure it out. But I did. We were looking for tin ceiling panels, like you know the decorative ones you see in diners and stuff.
Yeah.
And we like my wife and I could not. We just wanted one for this one little spot in our house. And you can't, you know, it's something so specific. And I think maybe it's like in fashion right now. So, like, you can get them on Amazon for like $50 for like one, and half of them are like plastic, you know?
Right. Jeez.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to a little flea market, and a guy was selling a whole pack of them. They were like 3 by 3 feet, and a couple metal signs. And he was like, I was like, how much for these tin ceiling panels? And for the pack of four or whatever, five, he was like, I don't know, $1. And I had known that we were just looking at one plastic one for $50. When we were like, wait, I was like, for all of them? He's like, yeah. Because it was just something he had extra of, because they must have done some project, you know, back in the day.
Yeah.
And I didn't go crazy, but I was like, here's $5.
Like, right, yeah, exactly.
At least
right.
Let me give you $1 a piece. And you don't have to break your change. I appreciate it. They're worth a bunch online. I think I said something like, man, we've been looking for a while. We've been looking for like 7 months for this. And they were like, perfect. So I wouldn't go crazy. But if you ask for $1 and I know they're worth $50, I'll give you $5.
Yeah, right, exactly. And he's like, sweet. I just made $5 when I was only expecting to make $1.
He's like, oh, you know? Man, hey, all right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's key, you know, knowing your audience, knowing if it's somewhere you're going to go back to, you know, if I find like a little antique store in like
maybe you can make a connection.
Kentucky, you know, and I'm just passing through Kentucky. And I find a deal, I'm not going to like try to offer up some other price for it. But, you know, if it's somewhere where I might go back to and, you know, I want the person to know who I am, then yeah, maybe you're like, oh, okay, you want, you know, I'll give you a little bit more. You know, I'll give you $10 instead of $5 because I know it's worth a little more. And, you know, keep me in mind.
Because remember me next time, lady.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. Your neighbor, it's like, yeah, just, you know, thanks for all the sweet wood. You know, I appreciate it. Here's a, you know, here's something I made for you. Yep. Just remember me next time you've got all this, you know, another barn you're taking down that's 150 years old.
Oh, yeah. I give them free eggs.
Yeah, exactly. Right. There you go. And that, and like, you know, a dozen eggs is way. Like that he can use, like old wood.
Oh yeah,
he doesn't care about.
And especially, yeah. I mean,
so
like
it's like a great trade.
And especially during around Easter time, I got the easy Easter eggs, as they call them, because they're already multicolored.
Oh, nice! Easy Easter eggs. What chicken? What types of chickens do you have?
Oh my lord. I have 26 total, and okay. So that there's a big variety there. So everything. So I mean, literally the eggs that I end up getting, I have olive green eggs now. I have blue green eggs. Whoa. I have very light brown eggs. I have brown eggs. I have dark brown eggs, like almost like a chocolate brown color, you know? So. Nice. And right now I have 5 eggs in the incubator right now that are going to hatch in about 8 more days.
Oh, nice. My goodness. Oh, that's so cute.
Yep. Yeah. So I will have peeps here real soon.
Do you always get the same color eggs from the same variety of chicken?
So the same breed of hen will always consistently lay the same color of egg. Yes. Is that
okay.
The question you're asking?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because I was like, you know, is it a variety like where you might have a chicken that lays like a light brown egg one day and then, you know, a dark brown egg the next day, or they're always going to lay the same type, and that, you know, whatever it is, like an Easter egg or a whatever, or, you know, like I've seen
friends have chickens, so they'll always... Yeah, they'll always stay within that breed. Now, the only variance that you could get is, like, how you said, like, dark brown, light brown, or, like, sometimes you'll get, like, a lavender color, they'll call it. And that's all based on, like, the bloom, which is the protective layering around the egg. And that sometimes can be very, like, thick, almost, like, so that it actually changes the color of the egg. So it makes it look like a purple egg rather than a dark brown egg or something like that. So, yeah.
Egg science.
Yep. So I'm very excited.
What do you have now?
Go ahead.
So now I actually have, I have two females. Actually, okay, so I have three females and one, she's not a year old yet. She was born May of last year, Miss Charlotte. We lost Meriwether in December, right before Christmas. She was my very first alpacas. Yep, these are my alpacas. Meriwether was my very first alpaca that I ever owned. I worked for her, so I never actually paid money for her. I bartered my time and stuff for her. So it was very hard whenever, you know, I lost her, but I still have my other three boys, four boys? Yes, four boys, Donner, Cupid, Luther, and Elvin, and they are a handful. Now, Donner got really sick last year on my birthday, and he has been striving to get over that. He had a parasite that got into his like spinal fluid and caused neurological symptoms and stuff, which was like showing symptoms like paralysis and like looking like a stroke victim kind of thing. And so, but he's getting better. He did have one night here lately where unfortunately, you know, like he gets into these ruts out in the field and then he gets down and he can't get the leverage to get himself back up. So I ended up finding him down in the field the next morning. And like this is what my whole like past year has been pretty much since September. It's just a lot of this stress of like every day looking out and wondering, you know, is my alpaca down? And then going into emergency, you know, got to go out with shots and this that. Well, you know, depending on how cold it is, then I have to take out warm water and like Karo syrup because you have to get hurry up and get their you know, get their blood sugar up, get their body temperatures up, you know. So it's a lot of stress that I didn't know. Like, I know farming is not easy, but literally I did not know it was going to be this hard. And it's just, it's wearing on a single person, you know?
Everyone says, or like, you know, you see a million Instagram things like, I'm going to do a homestead, I'm going to be a farmer. It's like, it's not. There's nothing glamorous about it. It's pretty to look at from afar, but it is a lot of weird hours, weird, animal things that you just can't, it just happens. Have you ever read, All Creatures Great and Small?
No.
You should. It's,
I'm going to write that down. Dustin, right
now, Dustin knows it. It's accounts of a British veterinarian in England in like the 30s and the 20s, so when everything was kind of changing over, and the real author was a vet, and he kind of, it's like half true, half not, but it's all these experiences of a vet in the English countryside. But it's all the stuff you're talking about where there's these really high highs where it's an amazing thing and you see these great turnarounds, and then there's some really low lows that there's just, even the farmers who have been doing it for 60 years that, you know, something happens to one of their animals and they just don't know. And sometimes you figure it out and sometimes you don't, but it's one of the funniest series of books I've ever read. Like, I will actually laugh out loud, like reading the book. It's so well written and so, it's so good. Dustin, I mean, you know it too. Our mom used to like read it to us.
That's
funny. That's great.
And there's a, I think there's like a BBC show that had a bunch of stuff. There's, the author is James Herriot. It's like that's a good series of books.
I think you'd relate and then get some levity. It's actually a really good, really like positive book, but there's definitely those random things where he comes and he can't do anything and they just don't know why some things happen. It just does.
So did I have did I have the two goats when you guys
were
here?
No, I was going to ask. I was going to ask about that. No, you did not.
Yeah, so I got two goats, Mo and Larry. I got them as literal lawnmowers for my pasture. And nice. So Larry has, his horns weren't burnt off correctly. So he has no horn on one side and like this wonky, like overgrown toenail looking kind of horn on the other side. And then Mo, he's just the biggest dick and he's got both full horns. And I like to, Grayson and I both, we try to wrangle them and like grab his horns and stuff, and that's like a game in and of itself. And now we went to the farm show in Pennsylvania this past January, and we went to the rodeo, and we came up with the great idea that we're gonna rope the goats this year.
So, nice. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, for sure. Uh-huh.
So how many? I was gonna say, how many arrows have they found out there in the field where we shot?
I actually have one. I think it's in the gun safe right now. But yeah, I've only found one.
Nice.
Nice. I was gonna say, I just saw a reel on Instagram of a guy running through like a gauntlet of like 10 guys with lassos, and he's like running as fast as he can and high stepping, and they're all like trying to lasso his feet, and like he tries it like 4 or 5 times and he runs and just gets like hog tied each time, and he like falls on his, it's so funny, he's like trying to run as fast as he can and they're just like everyone's throwing the stuff at him. It'd be fun, do a little goat wrangling.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. Grayson he liked the bulls, and he kept telling me that he was going to go ride them bulls whenever we were at the farm show at the rodeo. I said, oh, no, you are not. Sit down in that chair.
We'll go ride them.
You're crazy. Right?
All right. I got a couple random subjects before. I want to talk about... Dust, did we talk about last week about Penzic? Talking about maybe doing this?
So, last week... For people who listened to last week's episode, we did the whole podcast, and then we ended the podcast, and then Devin and I talked for like another 20 minutes, which would have been a great after show, just because we were excited about Penzic. So go ahead, Devin, you can tell us.
Okay, all right, before we get into that, that's a little teaser.
Okay.
This one thing I want to hit before we do, it's kind of random, but I want to get all your guys' what your answer is to this. Saw a, I don't know if it was a meme or something on Instagram where they say all people, you know, everyone has their tool set, whatever they have, whether it's, but when you pick one, it's like you're picking the house in Harry Potter. So out of the tools between Milwaukee, DeWalt, Ryobi, and Makita, which is which?
Oh, which house
is the house? Which house do you think corresponds with said brand? So once again, Milwaukee, DeWalt, Ryobi, Makita.
Ryobi is definitely Slytherin.
Okay. All right.
That's funny. Ryobi is Slytherin. Well, I mean, but so, okay. So
you should I give mine first? Yeah, let me give you mine, and then you guys can.
Well, before you do that, so right. Ryobi is like a lesser brand, like yep. So. But whatever. Okay.
I don't. No, you're right, and I don't think necessarily Slytherin is a lesser house. Like they're strong. They may not be good, but they're still strong. Okay. Here's mine.
Right.
Milwaukee, and that's because that's what I have chosen. Right. Is Gryffindor. DeWalt is Slytherin. Ryobi is Hufflepuff. and Makita is Ravenclaw.
I could see that.
Here's mine. Yeah. Milwaukee, I think, is generally known as a good, strong brand. And I have them, so I'm going to pick them as Gryffindor. DeWalt, people shit on them. And they're a little like... They shit on them, but they're also good and expensive, kind of, you know? So it's one of those things where it's like... Oh, you have DeWalt.
They've been good long enough.
Yeah, everyone has DeWalt, blah, blah, blah. So you get those, and I think they have a little edge of evil, so Slytherin. Ryobi, Hufflepuff. People make fun of Hufflepuff. People make fun of Ryobi. So there you go. And Makita
right, that's
is
why
kind
I
of,
laughed.
Yeah, right.
And Makita is kind of in a Japanese company, it's like a more like if you want it's the smart there. Brand, it's like Makita's always been kind of good, kind of like kind of a smarter brand to get. Not the coolest color, but it's a smart brand. That was my four.
I could see that.
That's some deep
I think
thought.
That works. Yeah.
You definitely put some thought into that one.
Yeah. Yeah, my go-to drills and drivers are all Makita. You know, like I like Makita. Yeah, like they've been really good for me.
So is that your Gryffindor-y thing?
No, I think you're right though. You know, cuz it is like it's not a DeWalt or a Milwaukee. What else am I thinking about? DeWalt. No, yeah, I think that's really it. Yeah, I think you're right. I think Milwaukee is having its heyday right now. You know, that's like they're doing a lot of stuff that are making, you know, craftspeople and makers and you know like blue collar people really happy with the different things they have with the pack out stuff. You know, mm-hmm. So they're in their mm-hmm. heyday. They're strong. Everyone trusts in them. You know, it seems like everyone's on board. And then Ryobi, I could see that right because they're just kind of like okay, yeah, they're like the. You know,
they're
if you're like
a
DIYer, bit. You know, you're okay with it. You know, it's not, you don't need to be the absolute best, but they're good. And DeWalt, I don't know. I don't think DeWalt is Slytherin. I don't think any of them are Slytherin though. I don't know which one would be. I don't know what is Slytherin. I don't know.
The only reason I said Ryobi is Slytherin is because they kind of like sneak up and then everybody has them. You know, it's like more people have them than what you actually think.
Right,
they lure you into it. Like, oh, I can get you the Saul for, you know, $200 less than right. what you would pay.
Right, yeah.
You get this much battery power for $99.
Right, exactly. Well, I spend $200.
I was thinking it was like Harbor Freight, the Slytherin, you know? Like,
yeah, right.
Anything from that, like maybe that's it.
Hey, but they're all about good. Your friends and family, so I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Yeah.
Shot. All right. Makers. I think that's about it. We can move on to.
In case of Penzic, let's go.
Penzic.
All right. So this conversation started because last week, Devin, you mentioned an event. You were like, okay, because we last year we did some. We did Nicole and I and Corinne did some more stuff with what's it
the SCA
no the no. the event the what's the event we went to
in October? Blade Show
why am I thinking medieval
Renfest
the Renaissance Festival thank you okay. So we went to Renaissance Fest and we were getting a little bit more into it. And so we've kind of talked about, Devin, you and I have started talking about more recently in the last couple months about going to the Maryland Renaissance Festival next year through the lens of makers and also through the lens of our channel, right? So what do we go to? How do we, can we interview some people? Do we do behind the scenes stuff or is it like out in the front, you know, just like talking to different craftspeople who are at these events?
Right.
And how do we talk? How do we do that? How do we shoot that? What do we do? And then last week, kind of right at the end of the podcast or right after the podcast, you were like, okay, well, maybe we could do something other like that. And you mentioned an event that was happening up in
Canada. I think
it's
Bicoline.
Right. And so I mentioned that I knew about an event that happened in Pennsylvania. And I couldn't remember what it was called. So I kind of looked it up as we were talking. That's what like we ended up talking for another like 25 minutes or so after the podcast because we were both looking at Penzic. And so what Penzic is an event held by the SCA. So the SCA is the Society for Creative Anachronisms, which is it's a group of people who wanted to reenact things from kind of the medieval time period, do like knights and armor and chivalry and all that type of stuff. And they wanted to do some reenactments. So they started a group, which has grown and grown and grown. And then over the years,
clan.
So like, right. And so now there's an event that happens every year. And last year, I think was the 50th year or the 51st year.
Yeah. Last year was 50,
of this event. And, So what Penzic is in the 70s.
Well, why don't you say how you found out about it?
Okay. So I found out about Penzic through going to an SCA event in Maryland. So in Maryland, so Nicole and Corinne and I all like archery, which like we took up to your place, Adrian. We brought along our stuff and shot bows and stuff. And so there's a place in Maryland near us in Baltimore called Baltimore Bowman, which is like a place that has an archery range and things. And so we reached out to them to see how we could become a member of the Baltimore Bowman and use that property to go and shoot. And so we went and took like an hour long class, which is like, you kind of come and you do this class and then you can, then you're kind of part of the group and then you can come and shoot the range they had there like more often. And so we went and we met a guy and he invited us to come back the next weekend or whatever it was, 2 weeks or something later that they were having. So that wasn't an SCA event. That was just like an archery event. He was there as his normal persona, you know, his normal, he was his person, right? I think his name was Jamie and he was teaching us with like a couple other people. And then he was like, you should come back in a couple weeks. We're doing an archery event with the SCA, right? And so the SCA, like, you're going to come, you have to like, you have to dress up, you have to be in some type of costume, and then you have to use time authentic bows. So like wooden bows, wooden arrows.
Yeah, nice.
And so we went back to that event. So we went and we spent the day, did the archery stuff on the day and got to meet all these different people. Jamie was there and I forget what his, like his SCA name was, but he was like going by that. And everybody else there was all dressed up in their SCA names, and the king and queen of
Atlantia
were there, which is like the area that we're in here. So that's the SCA king and queen. So we met a bunch of people, and then someone there mentioned us, like, you know, about this big event that happens up in Pennsylvania each year. That's like the biggest event for the SCA, you know, thousands and thousands of people come, and that event is Penzic. So Penzic is, what they call the Penzic War. So in the 70s, after the SCA got started in the late 60s, in the 70s, the king of the Middle Kingdom, which is like the whole middle of our country, sent a letter to the king of the East Kingdom, which is the East Coast, declaring war on the East Kingdom. And, you know, theoretical fun game war, right? So that never happened. And then years later, that person who was the king of the Middle Kingdom moved to New York and then subsequently became the king of the East Kingdom. And then, so then he found that letter that he sent from when he was the king of the Middle Kingdom declaring war on the East Kingdom. And then, so accepted war on himself from himself. And so started Penzic. So Penzic is where they came together to have the Penzic War. So it's a 2-week event. Both kingdoms, you basically do all these different reenactments. There's big battles, there's archery, and there's also these different competitions where you can earn points for your kingdom. And at the end, the different,
and there's so many different jobs and stuff that you take on, and
yeah,
and then you like, right, you belong to clans, and but you have to you have to know somebody to get in, like, because you can't just like show up and be like, oh, I'm just Joe Schmo off the street here to join Penzic. You have to be brought along with somebody's clan.
So I want to say Dustin and I were going to talk about this either way, and we're hoping you'd be interested in it. And I mean, you are Pennsylvania, so there was a little bit of maybe she knows about it. So how do you
I know about this it? And I know people that go.
Ooh.
Okay.
Right. Yes, as soon as you said Penzic, I was like, oh yes, I've been wanting to go to Penzic actually for several years.
So we started talking about it last week, and then all this week, like, we've been kind of messaging back and forth, and Nicole and I have been like looking up different stuff and thinking about a time period we want to represent, and you know, and then there's actually a local group of reenactors that reenact the kind of the northern seas, like, so Scandinavian, English, and Irish people from the kind of Viking era. So that,
okay, cool, yeah.
And that group is called it's like Neander's Wanderers, and it's got a pronunciation that's not that. And they actually go to different craft festivals and things, and they mm-hmm. do reenactments for like a traveling sales kind of, you know, merchant group. And so they're actually mm-hmm. kind of local to us here in Maryland. So Nicole reached out to them, and so we do have that. Like we now cool. kind of have a little bit of in where there's a bunch of people that do yeah. that are also part of the ASCA, although they're a different, you know, they're kind of a different group, but. They're like, oh, yeah, we're going to the SA and we stay with these groups. And we stay with, you know, we're going to Pensac and we're staying with this group and this group. So mm-hmm. so we might have a little bit of an in there.
So what, Adrian, so you know some people that, do you know what, like, kingdom or whatever they're in?
No, I didn't know what kingdom that they were in. But all I knew is that, like, they were the musician. So, like, everybody, like I said, like, everybody like has their different jobs and stuff. Like, so some people are cooks and some people are gatherers and some people are knights. And like, so when they talk about having like fights, they have like legit real sword fights. Like, yeah. So it's not like your big brother's LARPing, you know, with their foam swords and shields made out of like cardboard. It is legit real swords. And there's like referees that run around and like, you know, they declare whether you've been hit and stuff like that and throw you out of battle. And, you know, so as much as I've ever heard, you know, like the person that I knew that went, they weren't ever like a part of the battles because she was a school teacher. She was a music school teacher at that. And that's why she was the musician like in her clan and stuff like that. And that was part of what she did.
Nice.
But she was definitely never going into battle.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, because you have to be a, like, a land, I forget the term, but you can get a chunk of land and then have a certain amount of people. So the way we get in is either we get enough people to go as our own group, or we get in with like our county or our land. And right. I mean, Adrian, we'd let you in, but we're, you know, Maryland is the top of our kingdom. So I don't know what Pennsylvania is, but it's like, it's on the other side of the border.
I was just in Maryland yesterday.
You're close enough where we'd let you in.
I'm only exactly. an hour away from the Mason. Not even. I was like over the Mason-Dixon line 30 minutes.
Well, like, so, you know, and this week we've been like, I've been watching different YouTube videos and stuff and people doing, you know, going to Pensac or doing different events. And a lot of like what I hear is that they're very, very welcoming to everyone. You know, like once you're there, people are like super happy you're there. Like, come on in, try it out. You know, like if you're new, there's like you could spend the entire 2 weeks just going to classes for new people that are just there for the first time.
Oh, that's good.
You know, you can go to like, you could do, you know, battles every day. There's areas that are like parties every night. There's merchant areas. Like you said, everything's got, it's like these different like areas within Pensac, you know, and it's 10,000 people. You know, every year.
Yeah, it's crazy. A lot of people.
You know, it's like,
yeah,
it's insane. So, yeah, we're kind of gearing up to maybe do that this year, and also to do some content around that. So,
yeah,
whether we do some content at the event or we do some content leading up to the event, like preparing for it, you know, building whatever costume stuff or weapon stuff or tents or, you know, those type of things. So,
yeah, I want to reach.
Want to build a. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I want to reach out to the event people and then whoever we contact. Dustin, I know you're meeting up with some people and we can like reach out to county people and just figure out how it goes. I want to be the least intrusive while shooting.
Right.
But like, I know you can get like a media pass. We're not media, but maybe we can like, hey, we're making a documentary about it. Mm. Or that's what we'd like to do. Like, I think it'd be great to like a few parts or just like one 30-minute video on the experience. And then focus in on a few different makers. Cause that's always right. That's our thing and maker camp. And so we go to someone who does the armor, someone who does the textiles, someone who makes like the scripts and the books. And then maybe someone who like brews beer. And that's like the parts of our video. So yeah, I think we're just going to have to reach out to people. And if anyone is listening, and you want to email
sure,
us
right?
at theartofcraftsmanship@gmail. Any tips or tricks? I've been watching YouTube like crazy trying to figure out how it works, and I think it's something we should definitely all go to. And Adrian, you're welcome
to
come
along.
Dude, I
would love to make a full chainmail suit.
Oh man, that's crazy.
Yeah,
well,
right?
you have your awesome. you got your 3D printer, and there's a lot of cool there's a lot of cool 3D printed chainmail stuff out there.
I know how to make chainmail just the old fashioned way. Link by
that's
link,
gonna
baby.
That's
my
take
brother
you
was a LARPer.
Yeah, but you can't wear fake chainmail.
Sure
to
you can,
SCA
no one knows.
Event.
No.
Yeah, as somebody smacking your PLA chainmail with their sword.
Don't touch me.
Right in the shin.
You know how much PLA fumes I had to smell to print this thing out?
No, I'm about
so
to throw this 3D printer in the fucking shithouse. I'm so over it.
Oh,
but that's
man.
Just, it's micro technology and I don't like it. That's why.
Yeah.
But so anyway, it I think... Wait, Adrian, were you going to say something about it for, when I
She's
or Dust was it you?
What?
No, go ahead.
Dust was it you? You were going to say something. I think I interrupted you.
I don't know. Yeah, just I think you know we were looking into making a tent or like buying a tent, you know, and trying to.
Oh yeah, that's right. And Adrian said she really wanted to make something.
A chainmail outfit. That's what she was getting to.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's cool. I like the idea of chainmail, but that amount of repetition does not interest me. You know what I mean? Like
it's
I'm
like
definitely
knitting,
as a maker, like
metal.
I like yeah, I could see that. Right. I could see that like and I've learned how I know how to knit, but that yeah, the repetition of that like that tedium is not my game when it comes to making, at least in
right.
that certain thing, you know, like that's definitely some people's thing, but I'm like, I don't know, just maybe I could do, you know, I could do like a piece, you know, I could do like shoulder pads or something that would go in a leather garment, you know, like I could do little parts, but like making an entire shirt, that just seems a little too tedious for my,
just like protective like sleeves or whatnot for like,
right.
even just like how lumberjacks have like the chainmail, like insert, like they're like chainmail
right.
flaps over the tops of their feet so they don't saw through their
yeah.
feet.
Right. Exactly. Right. Yeah. Yeah, I could, you know, I could be down with like making a few pieces that go onto a bigger garment, but you know, as much as I don't mind some tediousness, I like to be able to get to the end of a project within a reasonable amount of time, and I think that's
right.
one of those things that could just be like take forever.
I think my character would be a guy with a big straw hat. And who gambles? I'll have games on me. I'll have different dice and
card
stuff
tricks.
That I can
yeah.
I can gamble with people.
I could see that.
What is that? What is that person? Is that like a? Is he like
trash?
A,
he's trash. I'm just trash.
Just total trash.
just a. I should be in the trashy area of whatever kingdom, trying to get people to gamble and drink. Ugh, just trash.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you got to be down in the bogs or whatever in the marshes. That's where.
What's
all
the
happens.
Game of Thrones? Flea Bottom. That's me.
Flea Bottom. Yeah.
So and anyway, think, yeah, I think we could either get a small group of people together or just make our way into something and then just maybe not go all out the first year, just figure it out, maybe get like a cool canvas tent, but other than that and dress up, obviously I want to be a part of it. Once you're in it, you're definitely not right. gonna be the one guy, you don't want to be the person in shorts and a t-shirt and
right. Yeah.
So
yeah, I think, yeah, I definitely think it'd be fun. I think, you know, there's a level of authenticity that you want to eventually go for, but being like a first timer, I think you can get away with, you know, just being wanting to go and being part of it. And like, and just, yeah, I think the main thing is that they're just very welcoming and want people to be there and have fun and
right.
not, you know, and you're not there to criticize. You're not there to be criticized. You know, it's like,
yeah, you
come along,
go, like, you dress up a little bit, you try and you have fun, and yeah, you just, you're open to stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it seems like a fun time. Seems like something that, you know, Nicole and Corinne and I could definitely get into. And I think that's also an angle, like a perspective, is that it's something that, like, we've kind of been interested in, and doing Penzic would kind of push us into being a little bit more interested in that thing, where I think some people go into, or like some of the videos I've seen are just people who want to go and see it and just document it for other people to see, but they're not necessarily want to actually be part of it for more after, you know, like continually. And I think that Nicole and Corinne and I are all like into it enough that we'd like to do some stuff that's like a little bit more regular, just like, you know, being part of that and trying to like learn about a time period and trying to reenact in that time period.
So yeah. Be fun. I'm in.
Yep. Cool. Right on. Devin, you said you had a game or something, or was that was the game?
That was the game.
Okay.
Nice. I was going to bring up some other stuff, but we can wrap it up with some recommendations if you want.
Yeah.
I'll start. I'll steal one of the videos I was watching about Penzic was from the channel Skilltree.
Okay.
And they're good. They had a really good, they go to all those type events. Like they go to the LARP ones and all those. Like I don't think I'd be as into full LARP, like with magic and stuff, but I do love the Renaissance festivals and reenactments and that stuff, because I feel like that's a lot of craft and people making a lot of things, and like that would, it's just good fun. But they do a lot of that stuff, and cloaks and money and making knives and leather stuff and all their outfit stuff, and they have good long videos about I guess the guy and his girlfriend, I don't know, but they're pretty cool. So Skilltree,
they did have a cool video on like a wanderer's staff, like a walking stick, and it was basically like a, say, a 6 foot or so tall walking stick that could be broken down into 3 2-foot sections and then could be attached together to make a 3-legged stool. Ooh. Which I thought was super cool, because that's like something that I made some sketches of. I thought it'd be fun to make on the channel, like doing a little like tripod stool. So I was like, oh, that's so crazy, like to have it so it actually threads together to make a walking stick. Like, how cool is that? Cool. Adrian, you have a recommendation for the listeners?
I don't know if they have I don't know if they have like a channel or anything, but like on the side of like Penzic, Pennsylvania also does this other thing called Penn's Colony, which is very similar to like your Renaissance fairs and stuff like that, where it's like king and queen themed, or like that time era, you know, and they have like themed they have like a whole village set up, and so you just come in this time frame, and it's pretty cool. They have like glass blowers, so very all similar to the Renaissance fair, but it's not the Renaissance fair. It's called Penn's Colony. Last year was the first year that they canceled it in like a very long time. Actually, I guess bad time to bring it up. I don't even know if they're still having it. Whoops. But if they are, it's a great thing to check out. You totally should. If they're not, whoops, bad timing.
You missed it.
Well, all thousands of people that listen to this podcast, everyone will like put their voices in and like bring Penn's Colony back.
Right.
That's like an event that happens, or is that like it's a place?
No, it's an event that happens, and it's just, I don't know exactly where it's at. It's not far from where I live, because I've been to it, so it's within reasonable driving distance. Just, like I said, it's like that kind of Renaissance fair disc type stuff. And, it's pretty cool.
Cool. Awesome. Well, I will I'll check that out. I'll see what I can find online, and I'll try to post something in the show notes that gets people to the right place. Check out PenzCon. All right. So my recommendation this week is a blacksmith and his Instagram. I don't know what his name is because he doesn't really have it on his Instagram, but his Instagram is Front Step Forge. And actually, saw him do a post this week of making an anvil, and it looked like a decent sized anvil. I think now looking back at it, it may have been, you know, kind of a medium size, maybe like not medium, but like a small, so maybe a 30 or 40 pound anvil, but he had the kind of anvil forged, and then he was, it was like a little too tall or something. So he was, it was in his press. He had just like a hydraulic press, and he was pressing down on it to like shorten the whole thing. He has some really cool, cool videos, and he does different demonstrations on blacksmithing around. I think he's up in Canada. But again, that's, Front Step Forge, and oh wait, it did have his name. Sean Cunningham, Front Step Forge. I ended up commenting on one of his videos where he did the anvil thing, and he just commented back like, thanks for watching, whatever, something like that. So I went in and checked out his page, and he sells all sorts of cool blacksmithing stuff. And one of the, Devin, you mentioned about doing like your character is like a dude in a straw hat who gambles. You know, like, Nicole and Corinne and I have kind of come to like the characters that we've kind of developed, or the costumes we developed for Renaissance Festival, are kind of Viking-esque, that kind of time period. So that's kind of where we landed on the kind of persona that we want to go for SCA events. Some of the reason is because I really enjoy doing blacksmithing stuff, and a lot of the stuff that I enjoy is all that kind of time period, that like, you know, Celtic or, you know, early medieval English or Norse or Scandinavian type stuff. So twisted things, torques, you know, cloak pins, things like that. So
yeah,
I thought it'd be fun to be able to like forge some of the stuff that we need that I can make. And this guy does some really cool different forging stuff. He, you know, he makes hammers and tongs and things. He sells those things, but he also does different events and teaches. So you can check out Sean Cunningham, Front Step Forge, on Instagram.
There you go.
Cool. Awesome. All right. Well, Adrian, thank you so much for hanging out with us. I know this was kind of a wandering talk, but that's fine.
Oh, absolutely.
It was like, we just wanted to hang out and reminisce about the fun things that we've done. Since we've had the podcast last.
It's great catching up.
Yeah. And you're doing, are you going to do Friends on the Farm again this year?
I actually am. I am not. I'm going to take a back burner this year because I actually, I want to get involved with my local theater group, and they are doing Seussical the Musical this year. So I kind of couldn't pass it up. And they have their opening night the weekend after I would host Friends on the Farm. So it's just very time. It would be, you know, it would be a lot of pressure. So I decided to put off Friends on the Farm for this year. But it does not mean that it's going to be over forever.
Well, awesome. Maybe we will all join together for Penzic.
Yeah,
yes,
right.
That so would
July,
be fun.
July and August. See, so
end of July and then beginning of August, and we're thinking maybe, what'd you say? We're like
first
July,
week of August. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, something like that. So we'll keep in touch, and if we are going to go up, we'll let you know. Maybe we can all get together up there and enjoy it for the first time together. And we'll obviously definitely see you at Maker Camp again. And if people are going to Maker Camp and you want to, you want to camp in the camping area, know that we'll all be over there. We're very welcoming, and you want to bring some food along and pitch in, that would be cool. Otherwise, all fun things.
Yep.
Sweet. All right. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for hanging out. It's been a blast, as always.
All right.
Everybody
thank
else,
you
thank you. Thank you all so much. Make sure you don't forget to head over to YouTube and check out our channel. Check out the videos that we have. We have a video that we put up recently about making the finding quality axe handles in hardware stores. You can check that one out. And we'll be working on a couple new videos here coming up soon, as well as being part of the YouTube Knife Maker Challenge, the Viking Challenge, which actually works perfect for our personas for the SCA Penzic event. And you can also find us on Instagram. You can find me at The Art of Craftsmanship, and Devin, The Art of Camera Guy, and you can find Adrian at Hickory Homestead Creations. check out what's going on behind the scenes in the daily lives of all the good things and all the bad things that happen, because that's all real stuff in the life of makers and farm people and teachers and parents and all sorts of fun stuff.
And what's your website, Adrian, for all the alpaca?
The website is this. Yeah, my website is also pretty much the same. It's www.hickoryhomesteadcreations.com.
Gotcha.
Sweet. Awesome. Yeah, Nicole, when we went up, she bought a bunch of yarn to make a sweater, so she still has that. I think she used a part of it for something, but she has it kind of together. She bought the right quantity for a sweater of yarn from your alpaca, so she's super excited about
Yeah, I'm not even going to get another round of I'm not going to get another round of yarn until September of next year. Crazy.
Wow. Jeez, is that typical? That how long?
September of this year. September of this year. Yeah, it was a year turnaround. Yep.
Oh, wow, makes sense.
I know.
Damn, wild.
Good quality.
all the work.
So.
got
oh, I'm telling you, it's a 2 hour or a 2 hour. It's like a 2 year process to from beginning to end. So.
Ooh, awesome. Well, good luck with them. Good luck with the goats.
Thank you.
Good luck with wrangling. And thank you guys all so much for listening. And we will talk to you all next time.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.